In this series about life in community, or titled Life in Community, and our title this morning is Obedience in Community, Dying to Find Life and So That Others Might Live. And this Life in Community series is basically really emphasized on the life part of being in community, and that's what we're after, a life that is truly life, life in Jesus, full life, being human beings, fully alive, being everything God designed and created us to be. And we've seen in the scriptures how part of fulfilling that fully human life is being in community together, for God has called us to be together. And that there is basically, as we said, no such thing as an individual Christian. We are only persons in relation and only know ourselves as we know each other in community. And so we talked about reading scripture and discerning the works of God in community. We talked about outreach, both evangelism and social outreach in community. Last week we talked about missions in community and how that we can do more when we work together in supporting missionaries together. And now, potentially our last in this, what was an unplanned series that we've just kind of been taking week by week, is obedience in community. So doing kind of an introduction on obedience. For some, the word obedience might have very little in common for you when it comes to life and life bursting forth and a joyful life. You may associate obedience with oppression, maybe strictness, anger, control, things that do not produce life. But the gospel of Jesus Christ and the Christian community calls us to a different kind of obedience. And so here at Oceanside, you'll constantly hear us talk about joyful obedience to Jesus. And those words may seem oxymoronic to you, but for those who have discovered the rich, good life Jesus calls us to, it makes sense. Because obedience in the Christian life, it's not burdensome. It's not oppressive. God is not some taskmaster demanding certain behaviors of us because he likes to order people around. The obedience we practice is one of a grateful heart to the one who died and gave his life for us so that we might have an experienced life. And the person we obey is a good God, which is why we can sing as we did, "You're a good, good Father." He's one we can trust. And he asks for our obedience only out of a broken heart of knowing what's best for us, knowing what will bring life that is truly life. So out of love for us and wanting what's best for us, he calls us deeper into being the person we were created to be. But being this person, of course, is not easy. We battle a sinful nature that competes and wars with us, that tells us to take the easy road rather than the often harder but more joy-filled roads. Things that never, we feel the temptation to follow things that never actually deliver on the satisfaction and the joy that we're longing for. And so we have to kind of know and be able to discern these competing voices and reflect on what it is that truly brings life and truly brings joy. And that's why we pray for such things as wisdom. Best definition of wisdom I've ever heard is that it's a patient sorting out of what leads to life and what does not, meaning life in Jesus, the full life God has called us to. Richard Foster says, the great spiritual writer, in the spiritual life, only one thing will produce genuine joy, and that is obedience. And so why is this? Why is it that in dying to our own wants, our own desires, our own dreams, and following Christ in obedience, that we actually find the life that is at the deepest longing of our hearts? The second point is that as we die to these things, we actually find life. So we're dying in order to find life. And here's what Paul says in this text. He says in verse 10, "We always carry around in our body the death of Jesus, so that the life of Jesus may also be revealed in our body. For we are alive, for we who are alive are always being given over to death for Jesus' sake," meaning allowing the death of Jesus to be at work in us, "so that his life may be revealed in our mortal body." So you see how the death brings life to ourselves. It is in dying to our own wants, desires, to our own selfishness that we truly find life and joy and happiness. And even though I think often we know that this is true, and maybe we've even experienced it from time to time, where as we've sacrificed and died to ourselves in service of others and of God, we've experienced that joy and realized, yes, this is the full good life that God calls us to. Even if we've experienced it, the joy of that, of doing that, there's always a strong pull always back inward on ourselves, our sinful nature resisting that sacrifice and that obedience that leads to life. Jesus lays out what truly is the blessed life, the happy life. The word blessed can often be translated happy, not maybe in the same way that we define it today, but in Luke chapter 11, 27 and 28, just one example, says, as Jesus was saying these things, teaching, a woman in the crowd called out, blessed is the mother who gave you birth and nursed you. So she's saying, man, blessed it is to be the mother of you, to be related to you, to be in your family. And Jesus responded, he said, no, actually, blessed or happy are those who hear the word of God and obey it. Jesus says, actually, the blessed life belongs to those who obey. It's not about whether you are related or in close proximity to me, but it's those who obey. Jesus confirms obedience as the way into the family of Jesus, the community of Jesus. In fact, that is the primary markers that we are his followers, is that we are obedient. So he's saying in this case, in reference to his mother Mary, that it's not just being related to the people of God that we are blessed. It's not just hanging around, so to speak, just the church and saying, yeah, I'm a member of those group of people and labeling ourselves a Christian. No, it's about more than that. It's about following and obeying. And for Mary, in fact, it wasn't her relationship to Jesus that made her blessed. It was her faithful obedience, as Luke shows throughout his gospel. But this obedience, of course, is not just about obedience by or through our own will, or through our own strength. True obedience is a work of the Spirit within us and is an act of freedom. It's never a reaction to oppression. The Lord does not oppress us into his service, but rather we choose freely to obey out of love in this way, that it is a choice that we are able to make, and that obedience unto God actually becomes participation in the great love of God. And so there's an invitation, really, that stands before us through faith and obedience into the family of God, into the blessed life that Jesus calls us to. And the reality is, at some point, to be a follower of Jesus, we eventually take the step into the ways of Jesus and the life that he calls us to. So yes, we may need to belong before we believe, and we often say that here, that hey, it's okay, you can come and belong before you believe, and that might take months, it might take years. We don't know. That's up to God. And you can just belong as long as it's going to take. But of course, eventually, the goal is to believe and obey and follow in the ways of Jesus. And the point is that we do this together in community, that we urge each other on, that we learn from each other, that we encourage each other toward obedience out of love for wanting what's best for others. As Hannah taught us a few weeks ago, that we were able to speak the truth in love, not in a judgmental way, but because we want what's best for others. So when we have that heart of the Father as God does for us. And I know for some, obedience or the thought of, you know, the spiritual disciplines or those sorts of things may bring up feelings of legalism, or perhaps you were in a situation, maybe growing up or maybe just recently, where there was no love or joy in obeying Jesus. But that doesn't mean we give up on it. And I think it's a temptation for many, particularly, honestly, the baby boomer kind of generation, who maybe kind of came out of a lot of that legalism. But let me just read you something from my devotional for this month that I was reading. And the authors say this. They say, for many of us, the judgmental, legalistic Christianity we knew growing up has created a suspicion of discipline and order that can lead to a pretty sloppy spirituality. They say, reacting against the institution's sickness, we easily find ourselves with little to help us heal from our own wounds, and create new disciplines and carve out a space where goodness triumphs. People who are afraid of spiritual discipline will not produce very good disciples. They continue, the longing for community is in all of us. We long to love and be loved, but if community doesn't exist for something beyond us, then it will atrophy, suffocate, and die. Discipline and disciple of Jesus, share the same roots. And without discipline, we become little more than hippie communities or frat houses. We easily fall short of God's dream to form a new humanity with distinct practices that offer hope and good news to the world. So part of the point they're making is that, as often happens in reaction to something that was misguided or abused, we've kind of swung the pendulum all the way to the other side from legalism to a point where we actually reject all spiritual disciplines or all calls for obedience that is meant to bring us life, and we reject the need for constant Christian community and the obedience that is formed within that. But I think over the last couple decades, one example would be, of course, it used to be kind of second nature, right, to just kind of show up for church on Sunday morning. That was just kind of a part of the discipline of being together and being formed in community. But we've experienced, of course, a massive shift over the last 15 years in the culture from that, where there's kind of a reaction sort of against that discipline. And of course, in a way, we could say, well, who cares if you show up for 90 minutes on Sunday morning at church or not? That in and of itself, of course, in a way means nothing. But the reason it matters is that how can we expect God, through his Spirit, to form us into the kind of people and community, the new humanity that he has in mind for us, and then to display that to the world as his intention for all people, and to be able to invite people into something that is beautiful and good and right? How can we do that if we're not actually coming together on a regular basis and giving the Spirit opportunity to form us into what he has in mind, his heart and his passion for the world around us? And that's why, you know, I think that it should break our heart if we experience that or see that. Not because it matters necessarily if, you know, the seats are full in churches around our communities, but because we long to be a beautiful people of God, formed by the Word of God and his presence, and that only happens when we are consistently coming together. And it becomes hard to unite our hearts together with God's passion when we're not with each other on a regular basis and getting to know each other. We can't really speak the truth in love to other people when we don't really know the other people that are around us. So the only thing that I think works in the long term is really having a vision for what God is doing in and through this community of people and how that vision can reach its full potential when we're all regularly coming together and encouraging one another and worshiping and praying and serving and eating together and all the things that we do as we go forward. And then we get called into the mission that God has for us. And that mission is dependent on us being together in community. And weekly we are being formed and shaped by him, even when we can't see it always or feel it. And, I feel lately like the last couple weeks in particular, there was a very sweet presence of the Lord kind of in this place. And even in our midweek gatherings, just some special things happening. I think as we've started praying together more in community, as we've launched being together every Wednesday, and we had the day of fasting, and we have our monthly prayer meetings, and we've been able to see and kind of begin to feel some of the results, some seen and some unseen. But it's that praying in community. I mean, it's kind of like I haven't changed my personal prayer life, but I'm seeing more in and around my own life and around the church life just because we've been praying more together in community. And I feel like we're entering kind of a new season as a church together. And God has called and is calling this particular community out of this area to proclaim to our community God's intent for all humankind. And our job is to be faithful in our obedience, living and practicing the gospel in a beautiful way and in obedience, so that the community becomes then appealing and helps people to know and encounter Jesus and who he is by participating in his community. So we must practice faith and obedience in community. And where we learn that is when we die to other aims and we actually discover true life. Which brings us to the last and maybe most important point, is that we're dying so that others might live. So it's not just about dying to ourselves and our own wants and desires so that life can be produced in us as the death of Jesus works in us and then produces the life of Jesus in and through us, but we're also dying so that others might experience and have life. And so Paul closes this section in verse 12 by saying, after he talks about the death of Jesus being at work in us and producing life in us, he says, so then death is at work in us, but life is at work in you, speaking to the church in Corinth. Notice the pivot from the previous verses, which were about us experiencing life as we allow the death of Jesus to be at work in us. But then this section closes with the key application that we don't die to ourselves just to find life for ourselves, but no, it is death at work in us so that life may be at work in others. It's the call of Jesus himself. It is only in dying to ourselves that we produce life in others. Of course, this is all over the Gospels. Jesus, in telling kind of one way of picturing it, says, very truly in John 12:24, I tell you, unless a kernel of wheat falls to the ground and dies, it remains only a single seed. But if it dies, it produces many seeds. What's the motivation for letting death work in us, meaning putting our desires, wants, and comforts aside? Well, it's to bring life to others. And I'll be honest, the most enjoyable times in my life are where I was dying to myself so that others might have life. That's when I experienced the most full life. It's not the easier life, but it is a fuller, richer way of living. And I've shared with you just a bit, even just recently, how even with launching midweek and launching this outreach at Arrington Elementary and doing all those things, this caused Hannah and I to totally rearrange our lives and our schedules with our kids and when we're getting up and doing all these things, and, you know, kind of really changed what our lives were looking like before all that. But at the same time, I feel like we've never been happier in a way, because we're dying to some other things, we're having to let go of other things, but we're seeing it produce life in other people. And it makes a difference. When I called us to a day of fasting on a Tuesday a few weeks back, and it was just so life-giving for me in a way that I've kind of just continued that at least giving up lunch every Tuesday to fast and to pray for others and to just ask God to do what only he can do. And as kind of dying, so to speak, to that one meal, I felt it begin to produce life in myself and in others. And it's just neat to see that happening. And lots of you could probably think of examples and of knowing how that works in your life, but then often we get away from it and we can kind of forget. In university, I was voluntarily kind of leading a youth ministry in a church. And so every Saturday night, you know, when all my friends went out and kind of, you know, got to have fun on Saturday night and did all those things, I would stay in my dorm room and I would work on my message and my teaching for the students, both Sunday morning and Sunday night when we had the youth group. And so, you know, I had to die to some things, but to see the life that it produced in the students and in the kids by giving that Saturday night up for those several years of university, I wouldn't trade it for anything. In fact, I still get to keep in touch with them and see the impact that made on their life. So as we put some things to death in our life, it can produce life in others. And this can change our lives when we grab a hold of this and when we desire it. I mean, I think we have to sometimes be pretty honest with ourselves that we're willing to die to all kinds of other things and rearrange our life for all kinds of other things that don't actually produce life. I mean, we're willing to do that. And it might sound maybe too strong, but I think, you know, often it is a work of the enemy that will call us to sacrifice for all kinds of things except the kinds of things that truly bring life to ourselves and to others. And, you know, I'm just amazed at how people will be willing to die to sleep and to family commitments and to other things so that they can be in certain activities or programs or their kids can or whatever. Or so, you know, when I was working in young adult ministry, I mean, they would, you know, be willing to sacrifice sleep for a whole night to be in line for the new iPhone or iPad or whatever it was, or the new Star Wars movie or whatever. But we're often not willing to do the same thing when it comes to things that will actually produce life in others. We often hesitate or feel that we are too busy. So I think, I mean, just one great example for us is there's this amazing opportunity at Arrington Elementary for 1 hour once a week to serve kids and to be a presence in that school on a weekly basis. And yeah, you have to rearrange a few things and give up some time. But I bet most of us could find the time to do it, to die to ourselves in order to bring life. And I mean, on Monday, you know, Hannah and I got up at whatever, 6 o'clock to get ready and to go. But I was just so happy the rest of the day, just picturing all the smiling kids and getting to hand them bagels. And, you know, it's simple but awesome, you know. And I didn't wish, oh, I wish I would have had that 2 hours, you know, of sleep back or something. Rather than that, no, it was life-giving to be able to do that. Of course, our ultimate example, the ultimate example, is Christ who died so that we might have life. In fact, the Bible tells us that he did it, went to the cross for the joy that was set before him. The joy that was set before. I mean, it sounds not right. But it's because he anticipated and knew the life it was going to bring me and you. So for the joy that was set before him, he was able to go to the cross. And so there is actually joy in sacrifice, joy in obedience, in following the ways of Christ, joyful obedience to Jesus. And this message is all about joy in obedience. It's not trying to get anyone to do anything or feel a certain way, but simply to let you know that our hearts, Hannah and I's hearts, is for you to know that the fullest life possible is found in Jesus Christ and in following him. And yeah, it does require some sacrifice and obedience, but it is a full, rich, awesome life of knowing and following Jesus. So let's be a people who let death work in us so that life may work in others. Ask the band to come up and prepare a song for our hearts to respond. But I just want you to close your eyes as a closing exercise together. If you can just close your eyes. Have a time of communion with God, and maybe it's been weeks or months or years or never that you've talked to God or tried to open up yourself to him, but begin to ask God what parts of your life you need to put to death so that others might have life. Is there something that God is calling you to lay aside, to put to death? Is there some commitment in your life that competes in loyalty with following and obeying Jesus? Just to give you one silly example, I mean, just recently Hannah and I decided that we have a TV-free day, which probably many of you have all the time, but we're pretty bad. So we decided to do that and putting that to death so that our family and others could have more life. But you know, just how we spend our time and our money, what are you giving priority to? If someone observed your life for a week, the use you make of time, the activities you engage in, the people you relate to, the settings in which you pursue those relationships, the way you spend your money, what would that observer conclude is important to you and to your life? Do your practices reflect your convictions about what life is about? Jesus is here to offer life. Nothing brings Jesus more joy than for us to receive the gift of life that he offers to us by dying on the cross, taking the punishment for our sin that we deserve and offering himself to us, the free gift of grace and forgiveness. And as we follow him, nobody's saying it's the easier road, but it is the better one. And so as we sing this closing song, I encourage you just to offer your heart to Jesus, to maybe open up places of your heart that you've yet to open up to him. And maybe it's for the first time opening your heart to Jesus, or maybe you felt some places in your heart sort of where other things have taken over that used to be dedicated to Jesus and following him. Maybe it's time the Lord will call you to give those things back up, whatever the Spirit is doing in your hearts. But take this time and opportunity to meet with him, to lay aside those things. Why don't you stand?